Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's all about The Rock today on Talk is Jericho. With Wendy Dio, wife and manager of the late, great, legendary Ronnie James Dio, who passed away from stomach cancer in May of 2010. Wendy's keeping Ronnie's memory and legacy alive with some great events that both celebrate his music and his philanthropy. She's telling us what it took to put together the Ronnie James Dio hologram tour this summer. Very interesting stuff there. And what started the annual Bowl for Ronnie charity bowling event. Every year, the fifth annual Bowl for Ronnie is happening tomorrow night, November 7th, at the Pins Bowling Center in Los Angeles, California, with all kinds of celebrities and great rockers taking part. Last year's event raised $74,000 for the Dio Cancer Fund, and Wendy's hoping to top that this year. There's still a few tickets available, or you can support the cause by bidding on any of the very cool items in the silent auction. Just go to DioCancerFund.com. That's DioCancerFund.com. And remember, go to Pins Bowling Center in L.A. tomorrow night, November 7th, if you're in town to rock out and bowl and do all those crazy fun things at the Bowl for Ronnie event. And Wendy's also talking about how she first met Ronnie James Dio, why he left Black Sabbath and started his own band, what she remembers about Ronnie's days at the Rainbow Bar and Grill, a very famous place. So we'll get to Wendy Dio coming up here. So I'm here with Wendy Dio, which is really cool because what's going on right now with the return of Ronnie James Dio, the return of Dio, the whole hologram thing. And it's just the whole concept of this, there's so much to talk about. It's really cool for me, though, because I was there. I think it was the last public appearance that Ronnie ever made, which was at the Golden Gods that I hosted it. Was that true? Was that his last appearance?
That was his last appearance. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Wow. Because I remember he was very frail.
It was three weeks before he passed away.
Was he feeling good that day? Or?
Yeah, I mean, he was. He was feeling really good. And I think it was really good for him because we get out and we always thought that he was going to make it. I never envisioned that he was going to pass.
Is it, not going to say strange, but is it gratifying to you that Dio's one of those guys that everybody loves, and in this business, you know, 40 years of doing it, it's pretty hard. Where no one ever really talks bad about Ronnie James Dio, and I've got a great story that I'll tell you about too. Everyone's got positive, very great memories and thoughts about him.
He was a very special person, I think, because he really cared about people, cared about his fans, he cared about more than anything. I mean, I think fans are number one. I think the animal's number two, and I think I was number three.
The animals were number two, so she said?
number two was animals.
Yeah, because we played a show with Motorhead at the Wiltern, and Dio was there. And afterwards, he was signing for everybody that was at the gate of the Wiltern, in the back area. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even his gig, but I was like, do you do that every night? And he said, always give people their moment.
Yeah.
He said, you might not remember it, but they'll never forget it.
Exactly. That's very true.
What a great bit of advice.
Always used to say, I mean, he came from humble beginnings. I mean, very working class family up in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And he just felt that the fans have made him where he was.
Right.
And so he never forgot that. And he always said, you know, he learned what to do and what not to do in Rainbow.
Oh, yeah. In Rainbow and then all those years. How did you meet Ronnie?
I met Ronnie because I knew the Deep Purple guys. Mm-hmm. I knew Richie quite well. I knew his wife very well. And they were in the Rainbow and they invited me to go to a party. And they had just formed Rainbow, just recorded the first album, but had not toured yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up to the house and I met Ronnie there. And I thought he was a bit too short for me.
That's what Tony Iommi thought when he first met him. He's too short to be in the band.
Followed me around and kept calling me and everything. And then he said, quit your job and come on the road with me. And I was like, no, I can't do that. I'll come for a couple of days. And I never went back.
That was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
That's probably
the mid-70s. 1975, I think that was, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So throughout the whole career, were you managing him?
No. When I met him, Rainbow had a manager. And when Ronnie got fired from Rainbow because he wouldn't write more commercial songs and they wanted to go more commercially, which they did, and that's fine, but Ronnie didn't want to.
Really? I didn't know that. So Richie wanted to do kind of the Stone Cold stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Ronnie wasn't into that. He said, I don't write love songs. And so he got fired and I said, we're going to go back to California. So I knew quite a lot of people there. And we went back to California and he started working with Skunk Baxter. And then he had another band. He was working with some other people.
Oh, he was working with Jeff Baxter?
Yeah. Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
They had a band or were they just
Well, they were starting to write and do some stuff. And then he was working with another band. And then the Sabbath thing came along.
Mm-hmm.
And he joined Sabbath and they had a manager. So I didn't actually start managing Ronnie until he had his own band.
Was it Don Arden that was managing Sabbath?
Don Arden was managing Sabbath when Ronnie came into the situation. But Don wanted Ronnie to, it was going to be their 10th anniversary. And he wanted Ronnie to write the music and record, but he wanted Ozzy to perform.
Oh.
And Ronnie goes, no, one or the other.
Uh-huh.
And so he left and then Tony decided that he wanted to work with Ronnie.
Wow, so in 5 minutes we've been talking, you've already blown my mind as a guy who knows quite a bit about Dio and the history of us. So I did not know that. So Arden wanted Ronnie to write the material, but Ozzy to sing it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So write and record the album and for them to do their 10th anniversary tour.
Hmm.
But Ronnie said no. And so Don excused himself and we had Sandy Perlman came in just to manage the band.
So, but when he left Sabbath and when they just started Dio, like Holy Diver era, that's when you took over as manager?
Yeah, well, that's when he said, I need you to manage me. And I said, oh, no, I can't do that. So I said, well, let me try out on a band. So we got Rough Cut and we put them together.
I see Paul always in Vegas. He's always singing out there now, the Rock Vault thing.
Yeah. So
Rough Cut was kind of the trial run for you?
Jake Williams, it was Jakey Lee now, he was in the original band, and I actually took him to the audition for Ozzy.
Oh, yeah, and then got Ozzy's gig.
Yeah.
What was it like, though, back in those days? You're talking about 82, I think, when Holy Diver first started.
81, 82, yeah.
How was that, like, I guess, A, being a manager, a female manager, but B, like, I just think of how would you put together a tour and keep a tour going when you don't have a cell phone and a computer and you're basically just stuck to the hotel phone with the little...
And you're a female in a man's world where the men were all trying to take Ronnie away and say, you know, well, you don't know what you're doing and stuff. And, you know, I had a music history. I worked for Decca Records and I worked for booking agencies in England. I worked for attorneys with reading contracts. So I did have
experience.
Yeah.
I doubt he would have asked you if you didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And exactly. And so it was very, very hard in those days. And also with going out with Dio, we didn't know what was going to happen. I had signed Ronnie on a solo deal, so it wasn't a very big amount of money. And we mortgaged our house, actually, to go out on the first tour.
Really?
Because I wanted it to be, you know, as good as what he had been with Sabbath and stuff. And then the record company kind of jumped on after we started to get success with the album.
Yeah.
So it was quite an experience, actually. There were so many men, managers, that would come to me and try to take Ronnie. And I had a little funny story with Bill Graham, actually.
Famous promoter.
Yeah. Great man. But they were playing up there.
It's like the Fillmore or whatever in San Francisco.
Yeah, it was up in San Francisco. And I think it was Day on the Green, actually.
Okay.
And So at the end of the show, and you went to settle, it had, I think, 16 chairs, broken chairs, that he was charging us for. And I said, well, where are the chairs? He said, well, I don't know where they are. I said, well, I'm buying them. I'd like the chairs. So it was like $1,200. It was something silly, like $1,200 or something. So he said, well, no one would ever ask me for that. You know, I said, well, I want the chairs. If I got to pay $1,200, I want the chairs. And then we were arguing back and forth about the $1,200. And I said, you know what, Bill? I think you need the money more than I do. So I spend that on lunch. Why don't you just keep the $1,200? And he was like, oh, no, here's it. So in the end, he gave me the $1,200. And about a few years later, I saw him and he said, you know, Wendy, you use reverse psychology on me.
But you have to be wily and very smart and very quick to deal with all those sort of things.
Oh, a lot of things. They'll go on. They still go on to the road. I just was in Kansas City sorting some situation out with this tour. You know, it's one of the things you do.
Well, I mean, because I grew up in Winnipeg in Canada, and like mid-80s, everybody was just, it was so heavy metal crazy, but everybody loved Dio.
Yeah.
It just almost like not knowing the history of Sabbath, because I was only maybe 11 when Holy Diver came out, but just this Dio guy is everywhere. Dio was huge from about 82 to 85, legit arena selling out or a big crowd band very quickly, like right off the first album pretty much, right?
It's been dead. It was 9 years. It'll be 10 years next year. I still have 2.5 million people on the Facebook.
Jeez, man.
Because he loved his fans. He loved people.
Yeah.
He was interested when and he had an incredible memory, like an elephant, really.
Really?
I mean, he would ask you, he would meet you, talk about you, what's your name, what's your kids' names, and 2 years later he'd meet you and he'd say, oh, how's so-and-so doing?
Oh,
and he'd remember. I don't know how he did that, but he did remember that. And he really took time to think about what that person was saying and not what he was going to say next, but what they really were going to say and what they really were interested in. And, you know, he just loved people.
I remember, too, like, look you in the eye.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which might not seem like much, but it really is. Like, seemed like you're actually legit interested in what you're saying.
Yeah. I remember a kid came on a stretcher from Make-A-Wish Foundation, and Ronnie just looked at him like he was just normal and shook his hand and said, next time I want to see you, I want you, here's this guitar, I want to see you playing this. His mother wrote to us like a year later and said, he's up playing the guitar.
Oh,
and we were actually invited to his wedding.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was like, you know, because he didn't look at people that they had something wrong with them. Mm. We didn't look at that. And he always said, you know, you have to follow your dreams. You can do what you want if you follow your dreams. Mm. Like someone said, well, something about what music don't you like or something. And Ronnie said, all music is good. There's no bad music because someone created it.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, he was a very special person.
Someone put their heart and soul into
it. They broke the mold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What about, and like I said, this is the chance for me to actually talk almost to Dio, but when you're talking about his gimmick at the time with the swords and the dragons. Did you guys put this whole concept and the stage show together? Did he come to you and say, here's what I got in mind?
No, we did it together. We did it together with another, our lighting director, Paul Dexter. We did, first of all, the Holy Diver tour, and then we did the Last in Line tour, which had a big pyramid and was a big Egyptian set.
Egyptian theme, yeah.
Yeah. And then Sacred Heart was really over the top. And that's where we tried to make a hologram then. Everyone who saw that that show, we had this crystal ball hanging in the air with Ronnie's head in there and talking to the crowd. And we did it with rear projection, but we actually tried to do a hologram.
And that's back in 1985.
That was 86, yeah.
86,
yeah. And we do use that at the beginning of this show.
Oh, the same
show.
Idea?
Yeah. Not the same idea, but we use that part just without the crystal ball of Ronnie talking to the audience.
But you had like a Sacred Heart of the Spider was there.
The Spider was in, that was in Angry Machines, I think.
Okay, so was it the dragon then?
We had the dragon. Oh, we had 18-foot fire-breathing dragon in the Sacred Heart. We had two knights that had laser swords and fought each other. We had a working drawbridge. What else did we have? We had a lot of stuff going on there, a lot of stuff. Oh, Ronnie had the laser sword to kill the dragon with him. The dragon came up at the encore and winked to everybody.
In the Last in Line, he had the whip explosion would go off.
Yeah.
You guys never came to Winnipeg. It was the two, like, I never got to see Dio. in Winnipeg, but the video came out, the VHS of Last in Line. And there was a lot of lasers, like the Dio logo was in lasers. Yeah. So even at that point, that was forward thinking.
Yeah, forward thinking. Technology, yeah, absolutely. Technology's come such a long way. I mean, with a hologram, you can have fire without, you know, I mean, we used to carry 17 trucks with Sacred Heart. You can carry one truck with hologram.
Right.
And you don't need a pyrotechnic and you don't need a fire marshal to give you a test every day.
Don't worry about all that.
And you have all the fire. It's there, but it's not real.
So, and when you were talking about, you know, the peak of Dio, and then, of course, all the other, Dio is never not popular. Like, there was different levels.
There's different levels, especially in the 90s when grunge came in.
Yeah.
That was a really bad time for heavy metal people because grunge came in and it was a new thing. But those fans are always very, very loyal. Very loyal.
These records at that time, like, I was listening to Strange Highways the other day. It's actually one of my favorite Dio records. It's super heavy. Like, it's not grunge, nor should it be, but it's not like he just sat down and died. He just approached it a little differently.
Right, right.
So, always gigging and touring is my point. You know, so when he passes away, like you mentioned, 9 years ago, and you've done a lot of things to keep his memory alive, Ride for Ronnie, which we'll talk about later, and then there's a bowling.
Celebrity bowling.
And once again, because Ronnie has such a great reputation, is so critically and personally acclaimed, when did you start coming up with the idea to do the hologram?
The hologram, I didn't come up with the idea. Jeff Pizzuti, who owns iIllusion, came to me in 2015 with the idea of doing a hologram. And I was not impressed.
With what?
With doing a hologram.
Okay, just the idea at all.
No. The idea was not what I wanted to do. But then he called me and he came again and he had drawings and different things. And he said, well, let's just try it, you know. Let's just see what happens. And the only one that had been out then was Tupac. And I was like, I don't know. The more we talked about it, and I talked with the band about it, Ronnie's band that he played with the last 17 years. Yeah. And they said, oh, well, let's try it. Let's see what happens. So we did. We created the first
version.
Edition or whatever. And that took over a year to do. So in 2016, we showcased it at Wacken Festival in Germany to 75,000 people.
And now, I've played Wacken before, actually just even last year. When you're saying 75,000 people, this is the legit, the field is huge.
Oh, unbelievable.
So, and these are true heavy metal German. To debut it there was a true litmus test, I'm sure, because people will tell you if they think it's shit they think it's great or whatever.
Absolutely.
So was it high up on the show?
No, nobody knew about it. We wanted to do it as a secret.
Really?
We did it at the end, right at the end. That's why I said it was 75,000, because normally there's 100,000 people there and 25,000 have gone home.
Yeah.
But there was still 75,000
people. So you
come out
at the end,
there.
Like after the headliner's done?
Everything, yep. And
we did
it, I think it was 2 o'clock in the morning.
And you say, hey, people, there's one last surprise for you.
I just came out and did it and was like, whoa. That, to me, working with it had not, because they make a head, first of all. They make a head and then they digitize it and then it's done like a cartoon, like frame by frame by frame by frame. So that didn't affect me at all. But when I saw him the first time up on stage there with the band, I just folded completely. And the record company people that were with me too, everybody was in tears.
What was the reaction from the audience?
They were like blown away, blown away. And then we went to Europe and did a few dates to see if the fans wanted it. And there was a market for it. Mm. But I wasn't happy with the hologram. So I said, I don't want to go out again with this hologram. I'm not happy. I don't like the way Ronnie looks. His eyebrows aren't right. His hair's not right. So they said, make some adjustments. They made some adjustments. They're not happy. So we scrapped it completely and completely did a completely new hologram. Now, technology in 2 years had come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
So we could do a lot more things, which we did. I still worked a long time on his hair. That was the hardest part.
Interesting. They'll explain that a bit. Why?
Well, it's just hard to get the hair to move and flow.
Because he had kind of the big, frizzy, long, curly afro sort of thing.
And I didn't want, and his hair looks different in different phases of his life.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want it to be, the first one they did of the hologram was more towards what he looked like at the end of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want that.
Mm.
I didn't want him to look like the 80s, but I want him to look more like 2000, 2004, that kind of era, I thought. So
and also looks like that, like the Heaven and Hell reunion era.
Yeah, that kind of look. Right? Yeah, and especially to go together with the band as well. Can't have someone looking like 80s, you know.
when it's the Craig Goldie version and he's looking like he's 2019.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So we worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. And I'm very happy with it now. Very happy. I'm very happy with the whole show. It's amazing. It has to be experienced. I mean, I know there's a lot of naysayers out there, and that's fine. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but I think they should see it first before they criticize it.
Well, that's always the case. People judge before they even experience it.
Right.
But why are there naysayers? What's the
biggest
complaint?
Well, they just think I'm dragging him up out of his grave and all these different things they say. And if they see the show, they'll see it's done. Certainly not done for money, because we've spent over $2 million on creating it.
That's what Ripper said. It's not a cash grab. It's
a cash dump.
Money pit. Right?
I don't think we get exactly the money pit. And even the show, I mean, the show is great. It's an experience. It's Ronnie. He's not there all the time. Mm-hmm. He comes in and goes out. We've got, you know, the band, Craig Goldie, Simon Wright, Scott Warren, who was with Ronnie for 17 years. And we've got Bjorn Engel, that's been with us for 7 years. And then we have the guest singers, which is Oni Logan, who was with Lynch Mob, and Tim Ripper Owens from Judas Priest.
Yeah,
they blend, their voices blend so beautifully together. And I wanted people, I had to have two singers, not one.
To replace Ronnie's voice?
No,
or not to
nobody
replace,
could but. Replace Ronnie. That's just to augment, to go along with the hologram.
So, and why is that? Like, why don't you have the hologram go all the way through?
That's boring.
Okay, gotcha.
It has to be a show. It has to be, have ups and downs and everything, you know? And then I wanted singers that didn't sound like Ronnie and didn't want to sound like Ronnie. Mm-hmm. So you've got like Ripper, who's like, you know, the working class guy that's got the, you know, he's
one of the most powerful live singers.
Unbelievable voices. Yeah. It was Ronnie's protege. Ronnie said, this guy can do anything I can do.
Wow.
He just needs some training. And you know, he was a very good friend of Ronnie's, absolutely. And then Oni's like the hippie kind of guy. He's got more softer, mellower voice. So he does more of the Catch the Rainbow songs, or he'll do the beginning of Don't Talk, you know.
Don't Talk to Strangers.
Yeah, yeah, stuff like that. So, and then they sing together, which is great. They do Gates of Babylon, they do Stargazer, and they do Invisible. They do songs
That's
together.
A great catalog. You
and
know?
Then, yeah, and then they sing at the end together with Ronnie. The three of them sing together.
What
which
song?
Is they do We Rock
yeah.
and Neon Lights.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really cool. And then we have all this stuff going on. I mean, there's
so
like
much video.
Video stuff going on. Unbelievable. I mean, it will take you on a trip where almost like going and on the Simpsons ride where you go through tunnels and all this stuff. There's so much going on. And after the show, I've stood and asked the fans what they thought. What's the criticism? And they all loved it. Everybody loved it. They said, you know, it's for the people, it's done with love. And there's so much love in the theater from the band to the audience. And they react together very, very strongly. And it's just an experience. And you know, it's for people who never got the chance to see Ronnie, or it's the people that would like to see him back up again. And I think this is the first time ever that kids listen to their parents' music. And so we find a lot of parents bringing their kids.
It's so funny. I mentioned that I was going to come see the show in Tampa.
Yeah.
And my son.
St. Petersburg.
Yeah, yeah. St. Petersburg. Yeah. The Palladium or whatever it was. And my son's 15 and he listens to Dio all the time. Mm-hmm. Dio, like the Holy Diver, Lost in Line, Sacred Heart, those records. And one, it's like where are you finding Dio? And it's because he listened to this song on YouTube, which led him to this song, which led him to Dio. And then this guy's pretty cool. I like the music, whatever. So we were going to go together to the show, and that was the show where you couldn't fit the production.
Well, it wasn't couldn't fit it. Actually, it was a 100-year-old building in St. Petersburg, and the guy was worried when he saw how much weight we were carrying that the stage was going to collapse, and he said he just didn't want to take the risk of...
Didn't he know that beforehand when you were advancing
you know,
the show?
Well, we advance the shows, but a lot of times people don't really pay attention.
People don't understand that about rock and roll, because like I said, I was talking to our tour manager about this. And I said, wouldn't you have advanced this? He goes, yeah, but sometimes, like you said, they're not paying attention. They just, you know, rubber stamp it, it's a stage, who cares?
Yeah, exactly,
You know, and not realizing the extent.
The weight was the issue. We have a hard time actually finding places to play because can't play clubs because it needs to be 25 foot high, 40 foot wide. to fit the production in, are not big enough to go into arenas at the moment. So we have to find theatres that are able to, and a lot of those theatres are old. And the one in St. Petersburg was over 100 years old, and they were like, well, they were really scared that it's going to be a safety issue and somebody might get hurt.
You said a couple of things. One that you said, when people are some of the naysayers that you're dragging them out of the grave. I don't see it as that at all.
No.
I didn't see it with the Tupac thing either.
No.
Because also, too, we know the technology is going to advance, like you mentioned, in 2 years.
Absolutely.
Imagine 2 years and 2 years. I have no doubt in my mind, it might just be a Vegas attraction or something, but there will be Beatles
performances. Absolutely.
You know, we've already seen the Michael Jackson. I was at Cirque du Soleil in Vegas. Mm-hmm. They use a Michael hologram, which is amazing.
Right.
You know, AC/DC with Bon Scott, Frank Sinatra. I mean, Queen with Freddie, you name it. I think that you right now, 10 years, 15 years from now, are going to trace this back to Dio was one of the first to do this.
It's funny because the promoter in Orlando, he had said before that he wasn't really a fan of the hologram. And when he saw that the show and everything, he said to me afterwards, he said, you know, Wendy, I've just witnessed history in the making. He goes, this is going to be the way. And it's true because all the innovators are either getting old and getting to retirement age or they're just, you know, passing away, which is unfortunate.
You can't replace it. There's no replacing Dio, but to see it,
it's
a taste of what it was like.
It's not a replacement at all. Obviously, we're not saying it's
Dio. Nor can it be,
It's an experience, and it's done with love, and we just want to keep his music and his memory alive, and that's what it's done for.
Let me ask you, how do you put together as far as like the synchronicity of it? Like, is the hologram constructed from scratch? Is the hologram taken from a live performance?
No, it's constructed from scratch, and as I said, it's done almost like a cartoon. It's with the different, you got to do, you know, they do the molding of the head, they do the thing, then you got to get... Every little hair has to be penciled in and done. I mean, it's a huge, expensive
process.
A lot of it's done like we used a lot of the people from that did Avatar as well. Those kind of that kind of thing.
How do you sync it with the vocal though? I guess is what I'm asking.
Oh, that's hot. Well, we have to isolate the vocal track, and that's taken from different live shows. It's not one show.
Are these ones that you had?
Yeah.
In the warehouse sort of thing?
Yeah, that I had, It's taken from live shows. And then Simon Wright, the drummer, has to wear a click. He has to work with the click track. So the click track goes along with the vocal. And then the band plays to that. So, the band's live and they're playing live with that. And they can't see Ronnie. So it's...
Really?
No.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
As a player.
Yeah, yeah.
So they can hear him, but they can't see him.
Right.
Because I saw that, you know, once the show got canceled in St. Pete, I went and watched a bunch of it, and they stand on the side with Ronnie in the middle. So I can see that, because if they're staying at the same, you know, kind of horizontal level, you're not going to see the projection.
Right. They can't. They can hear it, but they can't see it. You can see from the front. You have to be from the front. And actually, Bjorn, the bass player, is very brave. He goes and stands beside Ronnie, but it's complicated because there's a lot of cables and a lot of things, and he's like, he's the only brave one that does it. We're trying to get Craig to do it, but Craig's got wire, so he's not got a wireless. So he's actually Ripper and Oni went, and they've started doing this when we do the encore now. They sing together with him. Yeah.
Is the hologram created by 3D projectors? Is it above? Is it below? Is it on the side?
It's a screen that comes down.
Oh, it's a screen.
It comes like this.
Gotcha. And so it's on an angle.
A slope. And then he's projected onto that. And he comes in like in a ball of fire, and he goes away in one. It's very interesting the way, and you don't know when he's going to come. He comes in and out.
And you mentioned when you first saw this, I mean, how is it seeing your husband that's been gone for 9 years? There, he's real, but he's not real. But
because I've been so involved with it, it doesn't affect me. The photos affect me more. We have a lot of old photos that go up on the screen as well, and I remember the times that we took those. And some of those photos I took myself. One of them is you can't see the swing, but he's actually sitting on a swing in their backyard. And I remember the day that I took those photos. So that really kind of upsets me. But seeing him on stage, no, because sometimes I forget that he's not there, and I forget, and I think, oh, I'll go back and see him, and it's like, whoa, wait.
Right, yeah. I mean, even just the wardrobe that you've chosen and just all of that stuff, you know, I can see it's a really cool way to keep, like you said, the memory alive, but also to expose to a whole new generation. Yeah,
and it's,
and
I think it's the way of technology now because, you know, the Frank Zappa one just went out.
Oh, wow.
That one was done with the same iIllusion company. They went out and did a great show on that. That was real fun. They did that, and they were talking to a lot of other people. And I know that Roy Orbison did one.
Yeah, that one came to Tampa a few years ago.
Yeah, I think they're doing Buddy Holly with the Roy Orbison now. They're just making that. I just saw the announcement. And then I saw one that they're going to do Whitney Houston, and then I saw one that was going to do Amy Winehouse.
Possibilities are endless, right?
Possibilities are endless, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned you had to put a lot of money into this.
Oh, yeah.
Would every person and every one of those personalities, like, I guess I would wonder, are people calling Whitney Houston's estate and going, we'll do this for you? Whereas you actually said, I want to do this.
Yeah. And it's not just all my, it's iIllusion. Jeff put a lot of money into it, a lot of money into it. I put money into it. Armit Zappa's put money into it.
So what's your,
Todd Singerman's put money into it.
Oh, Todd. Yeah. Does Todd still work as kind of deals? Co-manager sort of thing?
No. He had Motorhead. I had Dio, but we worked together so long, so many times. And Ronnie and Lemmy were such good friends. And Todd and I are such good friends. Yeah. So
Todd's a great guy.
Yeah, he is.
Look at the possibilities. Ronnie and Lemmy playing a show together, right?
Wouldn't that be fun?
So Ronnie and Lemmy were buds?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. When Lemmy passed away, we did the funeral for him. And Todd posted something that somebody had sent up, and it had a caption of Ronnie greeting Lemmy and saying, "Beers out this way."
Because when you're talking about like the 70s and 80s and all those guys back in the day, not all of them, but it was a very much of a party atmosphere.
Oh, absolutely.
Not so much the same now, but was Ronnie super involved in that, or was he just kind of...
Ronnie, we did a lot of tours. Ronnie did a lot of tours with Motorhead. With Scorpions, with Judas Priest, as Rob Halford's great friend, you know, a real good friend. Actually, he's playing in Riverside this same day we were playing in at the Wilton.
Oh, okay.
And we were going to play Vegas, was going to be our last show. But then I saw that Judas Priest was playing and Paul McCartney. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. I think we'll end on a high note at the Wilton.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah.
What's your overall plan for this then?
I'm hoping to do another tour, maybe in the fall, that will go up the West Coast and across Canada and actually do a New York City date, because we did New Jersey and we did Long Island, but we didn't do an actual city date.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably Europe. But
is it something that you think could have legs, or is it you see it once and then you've seen it, or could you update the hologram?
Oh, we can update it. I plan on updating it. Technology's coming such a long way. I'd love to have like tigers and dragons walking out in the audience. I mean, there's so many things that I'd love to do. I saw a photo of Ronnie just a few days ago, and it was him holding a big crystal ball. I thought, well, we should do that and put Ronnie inside the crystal ball. It's like, you know, there's so many things you can do with this.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of fire, of course, in it. And we have stuff going on all the time. There's so much stuff you can do. And it's amazing. It's mind-blowing, actually.
Have you heard from any of Ronnie's peers at all with opinions about it or congratulations?
People that have seen it have loved it. We had one guy, I guess, on Facebook that got in a fight with Craig Goldie and said, this is disgusting, this is awful, this what? And Craig goes, why don't you come to the show? And he went to the show in Atlanta and he was like, blew his mind. And he wrote a whole thing and said how fantastic it was and completely changed his mind. And he saw that it was done with love and respect and a whole tribute to Ronnie.
I always love that when people are like, yeah, your band sucks. It's like, have you ever heard any songs? I don't have to listen to any of your songs. Just listen to one.
Yeah.
Just try one and see. She's like, it's actually pretty good.
If
you don't like it because you actually have experienced it, I'm cool with it. That's fine.
Yeah, me too.
If you don't like it because you don't like the concept of it, well, then you're in the wrong. You're missing out.
You got to see it before you, or listen to it, you know, before you judge.
Right.
How can you judge something that you don't know what it is?
Sure. Because this is kind of the next step now, because the band you're talking about that's playing was going out touring as the Dio Disciples.
Yeah.
Which was kind of another way to keep Ronnie's music alive.
So they're gone now.
So they're gone.
This is a Dio band now. And actually, I'm recording. I am recording it because it's live tracks of Ronnie's that they've never been heard before. Him live. It's playing with his band on those tracks. Bjorn was not on any of those tracks before. And then you've got Oni and Ripper on it. So I am actually recording it, and I am going to put it out.
It's so, like a Blu-ray DVD.
Yeah, No. I don't want to. Just audio.
Just audio.
I don't want to video it because I think that you have to experience it. And I think if you video it, people might just buy the video and go, oh, I don't need to go see the show. I'll just buy the video. But it's a totally different experience to watch it live.
You're right. Because like I said, watching the video and the spectacle of it was amazing. But I would love to be there.
Be there and feel the vibe.
Because it is like, it's really... Like you know, it reminds me of like when you watch a movie like The Polar Express or something. Mm-hmm. It's one of those very intensely animated, but it's almost like Tom Hanks. It's the real Tom Hanks, but it's not.
Right.
It's like that. Like it's like it's so deal. And then one little motion where you realize, okay, it's the hologram. But that's. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. I don't want to see an actual Dio because then it's a zombie Dio.
Right.
It's the hologram.
It's the hologram. You know? But also, you must know this yourself, that when you've got a great show going on, that atmosphere and how you feel the audience and how they become one, you, the performer, and the audience. And it's just such a high by the warmth in the theater. And that's something you can't see on a video. You know that yourself when you've got a great show and the audience is there and it's like, wow, this is just amazing.
It's electricity.
It is, yeah.
You've done a great job, like we mentioned, of keeping Ronnie's memory alive even before the hologram. Let's talk about some of the other things that you've done. I always hear about the ride for Ronnie. Eddie Trunk's out here every year for it. Kind of explain the concept behind that.
Okay,
and
so
what you do with it.
Yeah, how that started was when Ronnie passed away.
He passed away from prostate cancer, stomach cancer?
No, stomach cancer.
Stomach cancer.
And everybody was like wanting to give money to a charity or something. And I was like, well, I kind of get upset about some charities because they have such high administration costs. So I said, okay, so I got together with 14 of Ronnie's very close friends and we formed the Ronnie James Dio Stand Up and Shout Cancer Fund. And we did the memorial the first year. We did the memorial and we had bands playing and everything. And then I found out that people were coming from Sweden and all over to take part. And I thought, well, maybe we should do some things to occupy them while they're here. So we decided we'd do bowling on the Friday and we do the ride on the Sunday. And we did. It was a lot of work. I'd never do the three again together. But it went off so well that we decided, well, why don't we just continue with the ride for Ronnie and the celebrity bowling? So now we do the ride for Ronnie close to Ronnie's memorial, but close to his passing. And that is Harley Davidson sponsors us. And we ride from Harley Davidson in Glendale to Los Encinas Park, which is a historic park in Encino. And we have bands playing and we have, there's lots of vendors there selling stuff. We had food trucks, we have alcohol. We have a lot of fun. It's a family day with a lot of fun and we raise money for the charity. And the motorcycles, we have about 350 motorcycles coming. And it's amazing. We have the police escort on either side going down. It's really fun.
That's cool.
And then in October or November, we do the celebrity bowling. And we've been very honored to have Jack Black bowl for us, Tom Morello, Doug Aldridge, you name them. They all come out and it's great. It's always sold out, which is great. So, and we raise the money for a good cause, have fun night, but it raises money and also awareness for early detection saves lives.
So let's talk about that because I remember you might have said something. I think actually Dio was even talking about it after he was diagnosed to say, go get checked. So what exactly, how do you, like what, I'm sorry, but stomach cancer eats away your stomach. What exactly is it?
Okay, so what we support for research is gastric cancers, which is stomach cancer, pancreatic cancer, and colon cancer. Mm. And mostly men's, not always men, but mostly men's diseases, they're very hard to detect until it's too late. Mm. A lot of men don't like to go get checked. Women are pretty good. Men don't like the way they're being checked. They don't like the finger up the butt.
Yeah, right.
We are working now with Dr. Wong at UCLA, and he's developing a saliva test that would give you very early detection. So if when it's on the market, well, you could go to your local GP for a checkup, and they swab it, send it away, and can tell you at very early stages if you are suffering from one of those diseases. Mm-hmm. Therefore, if you get it early, it can be cured. Mm-hmm. But once it's in stage four, which was with Ronnie, stomach cancer is like indigestion. Again, I took Ronnie 7 years before he passed away to a specialist because he was having indigestion problems. Mm. And they gave him a heart test and all that and said, oh, it's just a gas bubble. Had I known what I know now, I knew nothing about cancer then, I would have said, go and get a colonoscopy. You get an ultrasound, get blood work, anything. You know, in the end, Ronnie just went to his local GP, who's now on my board, Dr. Sandy Kapoor, and he gave him a blood test and he said, something wrong here. And he said, let's get all the tests done. And by that time, it was stage four.
He was already stage four.
It was too late.
Wow. How long was that diagnosis until he...
7 years.
Oh, he had stomach cancer for 7 years?
We didn't know.
Oh, okay. But when he got diagnosed...
He got diagnosed with it on the 13th of November, 2009, and he passed away on the 16th of May, 2010.
Right. Wow, so that's unbelievable to think that he was living with this for 7 years.
Yeah, he just had this, he was eating Rolaids and Tums, like going out of style, and he had these stomach cramps and things like that. But, you know.
So for anybody that's listening, if you're having cramps or constant indigestion.
Well, not even that, just get early detection.
Yeah.
You can get tests, they're very easy. And if you're over 50, you should be having a colonoscopy anyway once a year.
You mentioned Jack Black, and it was really cool to kind of see, I guess I'm a big Tenacious D fan, and I went to Pick of Destiny, didn't really know what was going on right at the very beginning, you know, because he'd already done the song called Dio, but it's like, Dio, save us, you know,
right.
And Dio's there on the poster.
Right.
It kind of gave him almost a little bit of a career resurgence to be linked with that, and Jack Black being such a Dio fanatic.
Right,
right. How did Ronnie feel? How did that come about?
It came about because there was a song called Pass the Torch. Mm-hmm. Which they say was written about Ronnie. And everybody was scared to play it to Ronnie. And I played it to Ronnie and go, oh, that's great. I love that. I want that guy in my video. So we asked Warner Brothers to track him down. And which was Killing the Dragon, I think, there's a song called Push.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a video for that. And Jack's a busker outside the a store with that. And it changes all the lyrics around and everything else. It was really fun. And then Jack and Ronnie became kind of friends. And then Jack invited Ronnie to be in his movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great song. It's called Kickapoo, and it's got Ronnie and Meatloaf.
Yeah. And I did a tribute record, which everyone did. And Jack and Tenacious D, actually, we got a Grammy for Last in Line on that.
Oh, they won a Grammy for that?
Yeah, a Grammy for that.
With the flute solo. There's a flute solo in it. What was the guy's name? He passed away. Was it Dean?
Dean Shachtel.
Yeah.
Oh, that was terrible. He worked for me.
Yeah, he had actually talked to us about doing something on that record, and then he ended up passing away.
It was terrible. That was really terrible. Oh, he was only 49 years old.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It was just horrible. He had a heart attack and passed away. But that was really bad. And I had my record label at the time, and he was running that for me. And then after he passed, I just forgot the label because... it's too much work.
On the labels,
he was doing that.
So. What is a label nowadays? Yeah. Anyways?
Well, I signed now with BMG, and they were releasing a lot of the stuff with bonus stuff that we're finding lots of stuff that nobody knew of before, and that's coming out. And I think September that comes out, on October, and then Rhino's re-releasing a lot of stuff on the Black Sabbath stuff. So there's a lot of stuff coming out. We're all with bonus material too.
So when they're doing the Sabbath stuff, if you're talking about like Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell, or even like the Heaven and Hell record, I can't remember what it was called. Bible Black was the song. Devil You Know, is that what it's
called? Devil You Know. Mm-hmm.
Are you still working quite closely with Tony? And do they come to you and say, here's what we have, an idea for this?
Well, Tony lives in England. So right. What we work together with his manager, and Gloria Butler, who is Geezer's manager, is a very good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. She lives down the same street, Terry and Ronnie. In fact, I'm doing a documentary on Ronnie's life. And I just started doing that.
Oh, wow.
And the first interview was done with Geezer.
Oh, wow.
And it's one of Ronnie and him were very, very tight, very close.
I had Tony on the show, and I get a real sense that, like, once again, they just loved, you know, might have had ups and downs over the years, but just loved working and being.
One of the things I really am very happy about before Ronnie passed was the fact that they got to work together again. And there were no drugs or anything or things involved anymore. And everybody was just great. And they were playing amazingly together. And they were all just really on a high and really just loving each other and planning to do a lot more stuff in the future.
Mm. What was the relationship with Ozzy and Dio? Because we always would hear stuff like, argue, you know what I mean, like animosity, but is
no,
it true?
No. I mean, no. They kind of ran in different circles, but if they saw each other, they always say, hi, how are you doing? What's going on? I mean, they weren't close friends or anything, but they was not Amazon.
Appreciated the history of it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Sabbath is, I mean, it's like two different bands, two different eras, but you can't say one's better than the other. Mm. You know, I mean, Ozzy was the innovator in Black Sabbath and was probably one of the best frontmen ever in that period. And then Ronnie came in and he was just wrote different songs and it was a whole different thing.
It's one of the rare bands that when singer one replaces singer two, that they're both just as good.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like it's like a Van Halen or AC/DC.
Yeah, right.
Black Sabbath would be in there as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Because it's funny because in both singers managed by their wives.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, at the time when I was managing in the beginning, it was only Sharon and I. There was nobody else around that was a female. Now there's a lot more females. And I think females are good. Because it's kind of, you have to kind of, oh, God, they're like your children.
We have a pretty extensive VIP program with Fozzy, and I always insist on having a female run it. Mm-hmm. Because guys especially will listen to a lady more than they'll listen to a guy. If a lady, you know, a strong female says, line starts here, single file.
Right.
Or some dude says it, they'll kind of straggle. If the lady says it,
yeah, they do it.
They'll line up in a single file pretty quickly. Just you know what I mean? You have that whatever instinct it is. You better listen. I'm gonna yell at you. Did you ever talk with Sharon about that?
No.
It's interesting.
No.
I thought like what a great you know, on The View or something. Because you're the only two that kind of had that.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a lot more managers now. I mean, Susan Tate. There's a lot of women managers now.
Talking back, just kind of as we start to wind down here, you're talking about kind of those first few Dio tours. How would you put together a tour when you don't have a cell phone, you don't have a computer, and how would you run the day to day?
Well, you have to play out a lot. A lot of it's word of mouth, you know, and hopefully you can get on the radio stations, which help. And we had magazines then. A lot of magazines then. So, which most have gone now. In Europe, they still have the magazines. Yeah,
they still have some steam in Europe.
Yeah.
But not here.
Not here. And I miss those magazines. Mm-hmm. I really do miss those magazines. And obviously, you just had to play out more and get your following going. And I did something in the early Dio days. I had someone that worked for me go 2 weeks ahead of the tour and visit the radio stations and invite the radio personnel down to the shows, go to the record stores, make sure the album was in the store, make sure giving them posters to put up and things like that. Those are things that I did.
Mm-hmm. So would your tour manager kind of like, I'm envisioning like a big, like kind of a binder with foolscap paper that you're taking notes and writing down the tour itineraries and photocopying them and handing them out to the guys?
Well, no, we didn't photocopy. We had proper itineraries. Yeah, we would make them. But I think the difference now is definitely with the cell phone. It's so much easier, especially somebody gets left off the bus, which happens a lot, as I'm sure you know.
Oil spotted.
Now you just call them when they come back right away. You don't. I got a call one time, 2 o'clock in the morning. one poor guy, he'd just started, he was a drum tech, and he had gotten to go out to go to the bathroom at a gas stop and didn't get back on the bus. I got a call at 2 o'clock in the morning. He was in his underwear, left in the middle of nowhere, and I had to try and arrange for him to get caught back up with the band.
Always tell the bus driver.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I'm getting off.
Head count. Very important. Head count.
But even still, I always tell the bus driver, I'm getting off. Yeah. Don't leave without me.
Yeah.
The thing about Dio's band, too, is it is a lot like Ozzy's band or like Mustaine's band, where there's been so many cast of characters, and every musician that's in the band is so good. Who was the biggest character that ever was in Dio's band? There's some of the
stuff. Jimmy Bain. Jimmy Bob Bain, as Ronnie called him. Yeah.
You call him Jimmy Bob Bain?
Jimmy Bob Bain.
Jimmy Bob Bain.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Lots of rock and roll stories with him.
Oh, yeah. Everybody loved Jimmy. Jimmy was just Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the Last in Line project?
I think whoever's got the music out there and promoting Ronnie's music, it's great. More the merrier. You know, I mean, it's a tribute to Ronnie.
Yeah. It's cool, like maybe. And you probably know the inside story. I don't want to get into it, but I like the fact that as a longtime fan, obviously those Vivian Campbell records are classic. The fact that whatever issue there was, at least in his mind, he resolved it enough to take this project out, like you said, and play some of those songs again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, did he ever talk to you about doing the Last in Line thing?
No.
You don't talk?
No.
Okay. Well, that's all right. Like you said, the music is still out there and the memory
is there.
Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess last few things. You want to continue doing this hologram from the reaction that you're getting now. Do you think it has legs? Is it going to grow?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it just has to be. I think people more, what the people that come to see it love it. I'd like more bums on seats, obviously, but as we all do. But I think the more that it goes out, and we are the innovators of it, I think we're the first people that have done it with a live band. But I think the more it becomes a norm, more people will come to see it.
I like what you said about you know, why isn't Ronnie on the stage all the time? Because it's boring. Like if I went to a Buddy Holly, Roy Orbison, unless they have a live band playing as well, I don't know. But if it's just the two of them, it would get kind of a little bit stale. But with having the live element, the energy.
Well, we have the live element and we have it chopping and changing. Like O'Neill do songs, Ripper will do songs, they'll do songs together. There's stuff going on all the time. We've got so much things. You've got pictures of Ronnie all going on all the time. You've got dragons coming down, you've got tigers, you've got all kinds of stuff going on the whole time. It's like you maybe have to go back again to see everything that you missed because you can't see it all at once. You can't keep your eyes on the stage, on Ronnie, on what's going on.
I did a cruise last year, Chris Jericho's cruise, and we're doing another one this year. And I knew I would lose money at the start. Wasn't there to make money. My idea was to create an annual destination vacation, rock and roll wrestling cruise at sea. First one kind of sold out. Second one will sell out and building a brand.
Right.
Is it the same with you?
Building the brand. Yeah. That's exactly what it's about.
You mentioned, you know, $2 million investment. Yeah, you're not expecting to make that back in a year or 2 years. But
No. I don't. And then, of course, I want to make more.
Yeah.
So the more we do, the more, you know, I'd like to make do more songs, different songs, different outfits, different theatrics.
Mm-hmm. Different scenarios. Like I'm envisioning Dio actually in a medieval dungeon fighting a dragon.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to have like the tigers or because it's Ride the Tiger, you know, in the song. And I'd like to have tigers or the dragons walking down the aisle.
Sure,
I would love to do that thing, have interaction with the audience.
But like an actual kind of Vegas type Siegfried and Roy, but with the hologram.
Yeah, with holograms. Atmosphere. Yeah, exactly.
That must be very exciting for you too. Like as the keeper of Ronnie's estate, not just at home, you know, not that you are, but I mean, this gives you probably real purpose to go
absolutely.
Out there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm really, really busy, as I said, with the ride for Ronnie, the celebrity bowling. We're finally finishing the book. I'm working with Mick Wall.
Mm.
You know Mick Wall, because Ronnie had started writing the book. He'd written it up halfway through Rainbow. So, thank God he did his childhood thing because I didn't know that part.
Right. But you got a long way to go if you're just halfway through Rainbow.
Yeah,
you got 40 years to go.
But what I want to do, I want to do it sort of like still through Ronnie's. I want to find lots of interviews at those times that he did. So it's kind of still in his way of writing.
In his words, yeah.
Yeah, and also talk to people that, you know, played with Ronnie or people that supported Ronnie or his peers that, you know, different people like Lars and stuff that
yeah.
Lars wrote the most beautiful, beautiful.
He's a great writer.
He wrote this beautiful letter to Ronnie after he passed away.
Did he really? After he passed away?
Yeah, yeah, really beautiful.
Just to you?
Yeah.
For private sort of thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Their track on that.
Unbelievable. Well, they said they couldn't do one. They had to do four.
Yeah,
but I think, Kill the King, it sounds like something that they would have done themselves.
Yeah.
They made it. They brought it up, modernized it. I think they did the most
They're
amazing
really good
job.
At that. They picked really amazing. Good covers that yeah. sounds like Metallica tunes.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I mean?
I could imagine a mosh pit right
yeah,
there when
yeah,
it's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think they did. Well, I think everybody did a really great job on there. Mm. I mean, the Scorpions track. Sounds like it should have been a Scorpions song.
What did they do? I can't remember. What they did, Gates of Babylon or something. I can't remember what song they did. But you're right. That was great. Would you ever get like strange, like this is Chris Jericho ice cream bar and this is Chris Jericho bowling ball. Like, do you ever get people that still try and like say, I want to put Dio on
Slurpee
cup or whatever.
All kinds of stuff that they want to do.
Are some of the ones you just say no to?
Yeah.
Some
I say no to, you know, but that's a lot of weird stuff that sometimes people want to do.
Like, is there anything that stands out?
I'm just trying to think. We get so many requests.
So stupid,
things.
Right? I'm just trying to look up the Scorpion song. It's driving me nuts. Oh, the Temple of the King.
Temple of the King, yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like something that they should have done.
Yeah,
themselves.
Yeah, exactly. When you're talking about the estate, is Ronnie still, like, in this day and age with streaming? But heavy metal still sells records. Is he still selling a lot? The downloads, the streaming?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. As I said, you know, I mean, we still have 2.5 million fans on Facebook, and they had T-shirts. I sent the T-shirts out on the road, and we did some new T-shirts. They're really cool. And I found this fabulous photo of, and it's funny because I was just in the file, and this I wasn't even looking in photos, and this photo kind of just popped up. And it was one of Ronnie in Rainbow in black and white, with his Star and Moon pants on. And I was like, oh, and I was looking to see who the photographer was, and it was kind of scuffed out, and it just said Braith. Richard Galbraith. I remembered Richard Galbraith. And so one of the guys in my office found him on Facebook and wrote to him and said, we'd like to use this. Can we license this from you?
Hmm.
And the guy was like, oh, absolutely. So we made a great T-shirt of that.
Oh, that's cool.
And we have that on. And I sense, and then we have another one that Mark Sasso, who's a great illustrator, he did an illustration, and we put of a dragon. And we put that out. And I sent just a few on the road T-shirts. We're doing like $12 a head.
That's wow.
like unbelievable.
That's
I mean,
great.
I don't think we did that when he was alive.
The tour poster looks really cool too.
Yeah,
like
with the Dio Returns. And,
yeah, it looks great.
Uh-huh, yep.
Last two questions for you. First off, what's your favorite Dio song?
Has to be Rainbow Eyes because he wrote that about me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What album is that on?
That's on.
Is it a rainbow song?
It's a rainbow song, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
no
yeah.
kidding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dio always wrote about rainbows and dragons and wizards.
Yeah. Well, even in Elf, he said that was good luck. Even in Elf, if you look at the Elf songs, there's always on each album, there's a song that's got a rainbow written in it. And so that's just kind of his signature thing.
Rainbow Eyes is about you.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And my eyes change color.
Oh. Do you have a favorite Ronnie memory? That you can share with
so
us.
Many,
yeah.
so many. I don't know. I mean, he didn't like to go out a lot because he was on the road all the time. Just sitting with his guitar on the couch, writing music and watching sports. Huge sports fan.
Really?
Huge sports fan.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Huge.
A New York guy, right?
Yeah.
Who was his favorite?
Giants.
Giants.
Mm-hmm. Giants and the, what's the baseball team?
The Yankees?
Yankees.
Or the Mets, Yankees?
Because Mark Piazza used to come to shows and stuff, and he's like, there's a Mets. But he was friends with him, but he didn't like the Mets. He's a big Giants fan.
Yeah,
And and the other guy used to come in Arizona who was, I forget.
Tall guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, Randy.
Randy Johnson.
Randy Johnson.
Randy Johnson.
Another big metalhead.
He used to come all the time to the shows and stuff.
Photographer, too.
Yeah, is he?
Yeah. I'll leave you with one last Dio story. So we had SummerSlam in Phoenix about 2003, I think. And it was when it was Maiden, Dio and Motorhead.
Oh, right, right.
Mm-hmm. And so we were backstage hanging out, and I asked to take a picture with Ronnie, and I had a glass of red wine. I don't know why I had red wine, because I never drank red wine, but I think maybe because Ronnie was drinking it, and it gave me a glass of it.
Right.
Was he a wine guy?
More of a vodka guy, but he would drink
wine.
I'm a
vodka guy, too, so someone must have given me a freaking wine. So I went to put my arm around him, and as I put my arm around him, I accidentally, my hand turned, I spilled the red wine all over. He was wearing like a black, you know, typical Dio long sleeve pirate type thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to spill the wine on. He goes, that's okay. I said, God, I thought you might put a curse on me. He goes, how do you know I won't? And then he went to Dio somewhere. He went like the Italian thing. And I was like, Dio's a wizard. He just put a curse on me. And he started laughing.
You know how that came about, right? The Maloik, it's called a Maloik. It's the old Italian sign. Goes back centuries to either, whichever way you do it, to either ward off evil or to give the evil eye. And his grandmother, used to watch his grandmother, you know, was like 5, 6, 7 years old, walking down the street, and she'd be doing this to as he's walking.
Doing the Dio sign?
Yeah, well, the Maloik.
The devil horns.
And of course, Ozzy always did the peace sign. Mm. So when Ronnie was in Sabbath, I don't know, he said suddenly he just did it one day and just took on.
Now, Gene Simmons will tell you that he invented it too.
Oh, I know. Don't get me on that one.
We'll leave it at that. Thank you so much, Wendy.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your continued support. Really appreciate it. Couldn't do it without you guys.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah. Next year, I want to come play in the bowling tournament.
Oh, yeah. You should.
Eddie Trunk's there. I bet you I could beat him.
Eddie Trunk's always there. But there's one guy that comes, he's just nobody. Because we have the highest score as well. We have awards, you know, for celebrities, whatever. But the highest score ever. This guy, nobody's been able to beat him. He's got it every single year. But the best bowlers are Mark Ferrari.
Mm. Keel.
Ronnie's cousin, Rock Feinstein. Rock Feinstein, you know him from the Rods.
The Rods,
and he was in Elf.
Yeah, yeah.
Those two, if they're on the same team, you're not going to beat him. He didn't come last year and they lost. Because they're usually on Eddie Trunk's team. Because Eddie Trunk always has the all-star. He has the all-star. You should be on Eddie's team.
Eddie's
team. Because he's got the all-star celebrity bowling. And then he always comes and he has the all-star celebrity jam band for the... which Dave Grohl came last time.
I heard. Yeah. Once again, everyone loves Dio.
He just stepped in and that was there. It was great.
All right, the 5th annual Bowl for Ronnie celebrity bowling party to raise money for the Dio Stand Up and Shout Cancer Fund happening tomorrow night, November 7th at the Pins Bowling Center in Los Angeles. The Foo Fighters, Dave Grohl will be bowling. Talk is Jericho alumni Rudy Sarzo. Steven Adler of Guns N' Roses fame will be there. Matt Duncan from Armored Saint. I think Eddie Trunk is going to be there. So many more bowling to raise money for this great cause and to honor Ronnie James Dio. Actually, I think that's Jeff Duncan from Armored Saint. Just get that right. You can get your tickets and bid on silent auction items at DioCancerFund.com. DioCancerFund.com. Go do it now and help out Ronnie James Dio. Great, great guy. And speaking of great guys, Ric Flair is going to be on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager Part 2. We set sail January 20th, 2020. And thanks to you guys, we are completely sold out. No more cabins left. The wait list is the only chance to come hang with this great lineup of talent. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com for your chance to join us. And the NWO, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, X-Pac is going to be there. Jake the Snake Roberts, Booker T, MVP. Gabriel Iglesias is going to be there. Fluffy is going to be hilarious. Craig Gass laying down some comedy. Bruce Jingles is going to be there. Vicky Guerrero, Shawl Guerrero, Chavo Guerrero. I don't know where Guerrero's going to get on here. Jack Slade, Red Cup Jeff, Conrad Thompson, Eric Bischoff, Fozzy's going to be there. Kick-Ass, Killer Queens, the best female cover band in the world, the only one. Rubik's Cube, great 80s cover band. Farewell to Fear, Dark Sky Choir, the Dave Spivak Project. Light the Torch with my boy Howard Jones. Jared James Nichols is going to be there. Do not miss out on this. And also the whole AEW crew. Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Cody, Brandy, Hangman Page, Moxley. Just go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Sign up for the waiting list now, and we will see you there. All right. We'll see you on Dynamite as it's Jericho and Sammy Guevara versus Kenny Omega and Hangman Page November 7th. And, of course, don't forget – sorry, that's November 6th. Don't forget November 9th is the big pay-per-view. Cody Rhodes versus Chris Jericho for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. Don't you dare miss it. And don't you dare miss it on Friday. Special guests. I'm going to leave it a surprise because I haven't tracked yet. I'm headed to New York City to do that now. Let's just say it's going to be the first and biggest political show we've ever had on Talk is Jericho. We're going to have a great time. So we'll see you on Friday. In the meantime, in the meantime, stay hard, stay hungry, and a big peace, love, and hugs. Ah, yeah. We'll see you soon.